through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Happy Friday, and a happy Friday it is. We have some fun guests for you guys. Michael Bumpus going to join us at noon. Big Friday, lots of Seahawks news to talk about because we heard from two of Seattle's biggest stars yesterday. Quarterback Russell Wilson talking to reporters for the first time in how many months? Since late February, early March. And then, of course, you have Bobby Wagner getting up there talking about KJ Wright, Jordan Brooks. So we have a little bit on that. We also have Brady Henderson of ESPN who's going to join us to talk a bit more about Russell Wilson. Speaking of, I want to dive into that right now. Fans heard from Russell Wilson, Jake, for the first time since February. I think we got a moment of sincerity. In fact, I think we might have gotten a couple moments, but I've still got a lot of questions. I have a lot of questions.
As
still.
I would have anticipated.
Thank you. So I'll start with this. Let's play some of these cuts first. If you haven't heard them, we'll run through a couple of them. So cut number one. This is Russell Wilson. The first several questions of the press conference are obviously about the trade rumors. This was his response to one of them.
Well, I think first of all, you know, obviously I love Seattle. I love playing here. You know, I've had a great career here so far. I've always wanted to play here for my whole career. Obviously, I think there were some, you know, unfortunate frustrations after the season. Obviously, you want to win it all and do it all and do everything you can, you know. And I think everybody on our team does. We all want to win it. And, you know, I think unfortunately it got a little, little bit blown out of proportion a little bit. I think that my ultimate goal is to win. You know, I get paid to win. I get paid to find a way. I get paid for us to be able to make a play, you know, continue to find ways to win. And we've done a lot of that over the years. And, you know, the mission is to continue to do the same, but do a little bit more.
A couple themes here. One, he loves to win, wants to win. That is the number one goal. And two, no, he did not request a trade. He was very, very adamant about it, kept going to it. Cut number three, here's one example of that.
You know, in terms of the trade talks, I think anytime you play professional sports, there's always a possibility of something happen, right? And I think that's just the reality. I think that there's a lot of teams out there that people were saying that I was going to or would go to. I requested a trade. I did not request a trade. I've always wanted to play here. You know, and the reality is, you know, I think calls were getting thrown around and this and that. And I think that's just a reality. but I think at the end of the day, the real reality is that I'm here and I'm here to win. And I'm here to win it all.
Now, Jake, that's great. That's fantastic. I do believe him when he says, like, I want to be in Seattle or like I'd like to be in Seattle. I guess my problem is that when he says, and this was really from another cut, well, people were putting out all these teams that I would go to.
Mm-hmm.
Well, one of those people, Russ, was your own agent. Your agent, Mark Rogers, back in February, reached out to ESPN's Adam Schefter and said, no, my client does not want to trade. But if he did, and then he effectively nixed the list that was out there, took the Dolphins and Jets off of it, added Dallas and Chicago and said, no, this is the list he'd be okay with. So I can't really buy Russ saying like, in a way, like this was nothing. There were just rumors out there when your agent was part of that conversation.
The part that he's referring to, and I agree with that, the moment that you put that out there, it sends an entirely different message. But if you parse back what he's saying and you go back to the timeline, there were multiple reports coming out and a big article that came out from The Athletic, Mike Sando, Michael Sean Dugar, Jason Jenks. There was a big article mm-hmm. that came out detailing all the friction points behind the scenes. And then there was a list of teams that were released and leaked out there. And as that happened, it sparked. And before that even, there were teams that were calling. Jets, Dolphins, I mean, there were lots of teams that were calling before that list even came out. And I believe, and as I said before, that as we watch this thing continue to escalate and ultimately getting to the peak of Mark Rogers sending that list of teams and saying he's not seeking a trade, but here are the four teams he would accept a trade to, we watched an escalation on both sides, and it was tit for tat, and it was not getting calmed down. It was not simmering down, and we ultimately get to that point. And so from Russell's perspective, as he's looking at it going, well, there's all these teams being thrown out there. There's already speculation about where I'm going to be traded to, this, that, and the other. And I think it was an attempt to grab the narrative in terms of where he actually is thinking. The problem in this is, one, Stacey, as you pointed out in our show production, he already has a no trade clause. Mm-hmm. There's no, like, there really isn't a need for it. But in this statement, the problem that I have, and looking back in terms of how Russell was talking, how he was feeling, how what he said to the media, I never wanted to be traded. I never thought of I need to be traded out of here. Then in your statement, it should have said, not seeking a trade, has not asked for a trade, and does not want to be traded.
But
period. But if the team wants to seek it out further, I will only accept these four teams. Putting it and saying, and that
I wouldn't have
is,
even said that.
I know, but I'm saying that's probably how he felt in the moment. If the team really is going and exploring these, if teams are really calling the Seahawks and they're fielding them, then personally, I feel like, fine, if that's what you're going to do, then I'm just going to make it very clear as to where these conversations are going to be geared and steered towards, and who exactly you're going to take calls from, and not take calls from these other teams. Do I personally agree with that? Not necessarily, but I can see the human side of that.
Yeah.
In terms of being in the offseason and reacting to what is being thrown out there.
I absolutely see the human side. I see the human side of John and Pete kind of being like, who the heck are you? And I see the human side of Russell Wilson being like, hey, hello. Like, all of us complain about a job or a boss. Like, it's a very human thing to do, to like have frustrations at work. And for as many, you know, real life to athlete life comparisons as people want to draw, I think that's one that's not always afforded to people. That there are frustrations that we excuse from other people that we sometimes don't excuse from athletes. And here's my thing. I am irked by Russell Wilson, by Pete Carroll, kind of acting like there was nothing there instead of just very in kind of a moment of vulnerability.
Trying to play Jedi mind tricks
exactly,
with us right now.
Gaslighting a little bit instead of a moment of vulnerability being like, yeah, it was tough. We figured it out though. All right, cool. Like, I would prefer to cover a team that was like doing great. There's lots of fun stories to cover. Like that personally, like I like that version of the job. And instead, we are covering a team where there's all this weird stuff happening, where it's like your agent's releasing teams you would go to, and you have to be asked about it in a press conference like four times before you finally admit to it, or not admit to it, but before you finally, you know, acknowledge it. You know, Pete Carroll says basically, oh, the media kind of ran with that. And it's like, we all saw it. We all saw it happening. All people did was just have a question. What's going on? Do you want out? Do you want to stay here? That's all it was. It wasn't people saying, I hope this happens. And so I think I just, I all I wanted, understandably didn't get, because it's not how the game works. But I think what I wanted personally was just a single moment of vulnerability from either Carroll or Wilson.
You know, but the funny thing is that as Russell kept getting asked about it, you saw it sprinkled in there with his answers, right? I mean, the moment that he said, look, this list came out because there was all these names and teams being thrown out there, clarified it, right? I mean, whether you agree with it or not, that was an honest answer from him outside of the other things that he had said. You know, I think that one of the other things that you point out here is he goes back and let's go to cut number five, asked again, explains why the four team list came out.
Well, I think there's a lot of confusion because the reality is that I think I was in the Bahamas or somewhere and everybody was saying that I requested a trade. And that wasn't true. So we made it clear that I did not request a trade. And then there was teams being flown around that I was going to go to those teams, this and that. And so, you know, I think that, you know, when you look back at it, you know, it's part of, I don't know, it's part of it, unfortunately. You know, and I think that, you know, more than anything else, you know, that I got my wish, you know, in the sense that I've always wanted to play here. That's where I am. That's where I am right now. And, That's what I've always hoped for ever since 2012 when I put all the names in a hat and pulled out the Seahawks out of a hat, you know, and then sure enough, about, I don't know, 30 days later, the Seattle Seahawks picked me. So, you know, that's my mission, that's my goal, and that's why I'm here today and ready to roll.
One of the other things that stood out to me, you go to cut number 11 here, look, he also mentioned the idea that, look, things change in sports. He didn't say with 100% definitive. He wasn't 100% definitive and said, Stacey, I am not going anywhere. said, look, trades happen. We've seen this happen before. Things happen in sports. But if it's up to me, I am here in Seattle. That is my goal. And that has always been his goal. That's something that I've said throughout the entire offseason. He wants to be here in Seattle. He truly wants to be here in Seattle, but also isn't going to sit here and lie to everybody and guarantee that he will be outside of extenuating circumstances. I thought that that was also another key thing here in Cut 11.
Well, I think any time in sports, obviously things can change. I think that's just the reality. Everybody knows that, you know. But I think that for me, my heart of a hearts, and, you know, I love the city. I love this place. You know, I love everything about it from the moment I touched down to Seattle Children's to, you know, our Why Not You Academy to everything else that we have going on. This place has meant a lot. And ultimately, I love the fans. I love my teammates. I love this coaching staff. I love this building. You know, so every time I come up here, I get excited. You know, just to get ready to go again.
So when you break that all down, Stacey, to me, it's, you know, we had a conversation with Joe Fan yesterday about, you know, what Daniel Jeremiah's comments were about a short term marriage. I do believe that there is a huge emphasis and need to win. There is an urgency in terms of winning, in terms of, you know, showing that they're taking the right steps and progressing. When we talk about, are we going to have the same conversation again next year? It could be, but in my estimation, in terms of where things are currently at, I think it would take, a lot would have to occur negatively for this to go down that way. I think Russell Wilson, without a doubt, finishes out the rest of his contract here in Seattle. And past that, I think that that will be an interesting question. But what they have definitely done, and what Russell has done and Pete Carroll have done, they have definitely kicked this conversation down the road. If you want to point out any positives, Russell Wilson, Pete Carroll talking about how they're both on their relationship couldn't be any stronger. Their relationship's on the same page. Well, Pete Carroll back in May, here he is, cut two, kind of echoing the same thing, that this is just all blown out of proportion, Stacey.
Yeah, well, it seems like it's really old news to talk about this because it's been such a long time. The little bit that he said carried so much airtime that it became bigger than life. Throughout the whole process, Russell, we've always been connected. We've always been talking. We've never not been in communication, and we weren't at all at this time either. A couple things that came out got magnified, and the questions came out, and there was a couple things. You know, he was frustrated when he was talking, just like any of us can sometimes emphasize something that's, you know, on the top of our mind, and it can be played differently than it really played itself out.
So, look, they're both on the same page. They're both echoing essentially the same thing. I think Russell admitted at different points along the way that there were some friction points, that there was relationship that needed to be mended. There was long conversations. He mentioned one-on-one conversations with Pete Carroll, John Schneider, even Chuck Arnold. You know, if there wasn't anything wrong, why did that need to happen, right? Mm-hmm. So there's some insight into that. And also, you go to cut number 24, Russell Wilson saying, like, I'm at the Super Bowl and I was ticked off.
No, listen, when I'm sitting in the Super Bowl and watching the Super Bowl, like, I should be pissed off, right? I mean, at the end of the day, you should be wanting to sit there and watch the game and want to be there and want to play the game, especially when you played in it twice. You know, and it's one of those things like, man, we got to get back here.
All right. Well, we'll be getting back to this, and that includes a conversation we're going to have, but then also we're bringing on ESPN's Brady Henderson. Before we get to any of that, it is 11:15. That means it's time for headlines.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
Headlines.
Presented by Tila Mortgage.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Jake and Stacey.
Number one, the Mariners dropped the series finale to the Tigers yesterday afternoon, but GM Jerry DePoto remains very hopeful about where the rebuild currently stands.
Our hope is that as we get to the All-Star break, that we see a lineup on the field that is reflective of what we think our future championship clubs are going to start to look like. And you can fill in the blanks. And that includes guys like Evan White, and Kyle Lewis, and Jared Kelnick, and the young players that you're starting to see already bust through, guys like Jake Fraley and J.P. Crawford, and hopefully Dylan Moore is part of that sooner than later, coming back from his injury. And that could include guys like Cal Raleigh, in addition to the players who've already appeared in the paper.
What's the actual headline?
The actual headline. Jerry DePoto says he thinks Mariners will have better second half, doesn't specify year, decade, or century. Look, I actually,
yikes.
What is a GM going to say? The point of when I do make like the joke or whatever, like it's he is in a tough spot. What are you going to say? Oh, man, I'm a little worried about the second half. We got a ton of injuries. This is the only thing he can say. We're excited to see where the future of the club goes. The problem is there is a ticking clock now. You started a ticking clock for Mariners fans when you said 2021, maybe 2022. It looks like that's been pushed back. It's understandable that that happened because you missed a minor league season in the middle of a pandemic. But don't get me wrong, that clock is still ticking. It is still going. Mariners fans, as patient as they have been for 20 years of missed playoffs, want to be there. They are hungry. They want to be back in the postseason. They want a team they can be proud of and a team that is fun to watch. At times, this Mariners team has been that, but they are not ready to contend, and people are dying to see that. I don't think that's going to be changing in the second half of this season.
Yeah, feeling like Bill Murray in Groundhog Day right now, just waking up to the same old song and dance. And when you talk about second half, you're right. What is Jerry DePoto supposed to say? Now, when he says those things of getting some of these younger guys up, all I'm hearing is that these are names and faces that you can see and can count on them being there for multiple years down the road. Not necessarily that all of a sudden the second half, you're going to see these guys in the lineup and also we're going to have this tremendous success. Remember, Jared Kelnick came up, wasn't pretty the first time. Taylor Trammell came up, wasn't pretty the first time. So just because you get Cal Raleigh, you get Evan White, you get some of these names into this lineup, Jared Kelnick back, there's still going to be growing pains. There's still going to be all of that to go with it in the month of July, August, September. But you do get to have some of the younger generation come up through their farm system. And I got to wonder if you're Ty France, you're Mitch Haniger, you're any of those guys, and your name wasn't mentioned in this, what are you thinking?
All right. Next headline.
Headlines.
In his first press conference of OTAs yesterday, Russell Wilson assured fans that he did not ask for a trade and wants to be in Seattle forever. What is the actual headline?
Actual headline rewrite. Russell Wilson says he didn't demand a trade earlier this year. In true Seattle fashion, he politely insisted. I have another one. Can I try this one out for you guys?
Sure.
Okay. Russell Wilson clarifies he didn't demand a trade from the Seahawks. He merely entered the transfer portal.
I like that one.
Yeah.
I like that one.
You can always come back if you enter the transfer portal.
That's the thing.
The way the portal works now, yeah. you can dip your toe in, you can step right out.
Here's the thing. I think that I imagine that by Russell Wilson's definition of did I storm into the office and say I want to trade, that no. Like I think he didn't do that. Like, I believe him. Do I think that he didn't escalate it like we were talking about? No. Like, that you were part of this conversation too.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I really, in this offseason, I don't hold one party blameless. I believe that when you get into this process and you continue to keep escalating it, I think that that's where ultimately you see yourself as Russell Wilson and coming out with those four teams. You may be saying that you're in the interest and in the business of clarifying your position, but also what you're doing is you're putting it out there for everybody in the NFL that, hey, if a trade was to go down, you are open to the possibility instead of just shutting it clear off. And that just goes to show there was legitimate friction. Did Russell Wilson, was his goal, was his intent to be traded when he came out with this list? No, but I do think there was a little extra something of, oh, okay, you're going to talk to some teams? You're going to field calls? All right, I'm going to put this out there.
Headlines.
The Athletic's Ryan S. Clark reporting last night that Root Sports is exploring streaming options with Hulu and YouTube. They're not on any streaming platforms right now. So what are we rewriting this headline?
Man, in other news, Root Sports discovers the internet. Like, welcome to 2021. You did it. I mean, they might as well. Like, do you guys have an AOL email address? Now, I say this, and I'm being a little mean, but I adore the broadcasting crew from Root Sports. I love everyone there. This is really more of me, selfishly, as someone who does not have cable and who streams everything, being like, I mean, I love listening to the games on my phone, but, like, it's just weird. I hear so many frustrations about, like, how can I just catch a game or tune in quickly? And, like, there's no way to do it if you don't have cable.
Evolving with the times, right? Evolving with the times, and that is the key. And Root Sports is definitely getting to that point, especially as you take on as many teams that you're about to take on. Now you're going to have, Curtis, what'd you say, three major sports teams?
Kraken, Blazers, and Mariners.
Yes.
You've got to do it.
You've got three major sports teams. You can't satisfy everybody by just having it purely on cable or cable providers. You've got to be able to put it out there for streaming services. It's the smart move, the best way to get it done, and it's about time.
Also, if anyone has ever struggled with, like, a bad cable company, it is a headache. I like that I have Hulu Live, and I much prefer it to just calling every time, like, why is my bill higher? What's going on here? All right. Does DePoto's version of the future have Haniger? We're going to be getting into that at 11:45. Before we do any of that, though, Mike's all going to join us next. Jake, I've got to ask him about what Russell Wilson had to say in these press conferences, and also whether he's buying some of Russell Wilson's excitement about Shane Waldron. I think I am. I think this team seems very excited, but Mike had some critiques earlier. I want to see if those are still there. Mike Salk will join us next on Jake and Stacey. Do not go anywhere.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
Joining us now is Mike Salk, brought to you by Jafco Plumbing and Sewer. Hey, Mike, happy Friday.
Hey, gang. How are we doing?
You know, we're good. We're recapping everything we learned from Russell Wilson's press conference. We started by playing a ton of audio. Now, were you able to catch any of it yesterday?
I've seen a little, yeah.
Okay, what's your immediate takeaway?
Well, I mean, I just love Russ saying he didn't ask for a trade. I mean, talking about the whole, you know, the way you want to mince words. Did you ask for one, or did you say, if I were to ask for one, hypothetically, here are the four teams I would use, and I'm going to go through my agent to do the dirty work and this, that, and the other. You know what? It doesn't matter what's real. What matters is how you choose to move forward after it. And if that's what he needs to do, the same way Pete needed to say that it was a media creation and a media story and not a real one, hey, whatever. Whatever you got to do, it doesn't have to be real. You just have to tell yourself something that allows you to move forward. And I'm great with that. Good. Move forward. Be Russell Wilson. Be the Seahawks. Be together. Go win a Super Bowl. And everything else will just go away.
Yeah, so obviously we're going to break down and we're going to dive into the intricacies of what they said and kind of rewind history and go back and look through it a little bit. But I think that is the most important thing. I played two cuts of Russell Wilson saying it was overblown. I played a cut of Pete Carroll saying it was blown out of proportion. It was, you know, basically the same thing. And I guess if their relationship is strong as they're saying it is, I guess it's a good thing that they're kind of echoing each other from that regard. You know, can they truly put this behind them? Are they just kicking this can down for later down the road? Or do you think that they have been able to come to a conclusion where they can move forward together and be successful together?
Yeah. I don't know that we're going to know the answer to that for a little while. I mean, I certainly have my doubts that this thing is 100% over, right? Everything's fine when things are good. What happens when you go through another rough patch? But it's interesting you bring that up. I think what Pete and Russ most have in common is that they bend the world to the way they want to see it, not necessarily the way things are, right? And it manifests itself in their extreme positivity, even in the face of what looks to be 100% the opposite of that. And with Russ, I always think of, do you remember that god-awful Cardinals game? I think it was a Sunday night game that finished, like, what was it, 6-3 or whatever?
Yeah.
Or 3-3. It was a 3-3 tie. Mm-hmm. You remember there's this moment there where the Seahawks miss a field goal to win it, and everyone on the sideline is dejected and looks like, oh, no. And Russ just has this look in his face like, yeah, all right, whatever. Next thing happens. And I always think of that for the way, you know, it doesn't matter what the reality looks like to everyone else. it's what Russ has decided his reality is, and it allows him to make, you know, lemonade out of lemons all the time on the field. But it also, I think, allows him to sort of, you know, take a fresh look at the situation here in Seattle and find a way to move forward regardless of who was responsible for what happened in the past.
Yeah, he mentioned in the press conference that compartmentalizing is one of his strengths. And from my experience being able to see this up close, I think that there was a part, obviously, through the offseason where we saw it at the peak of where things really got heated and there was definite friction. There's no question about it. You can deny it all you want, but we all know the truth. Now, then there's the other side of it where you do turn over that leaf. You do have these one-on-one conversations, and you do then flip the script and become super dialed in, super focused, super driven. And he looks, I mean, he's the best shape that he's been in. And one of the other things that he incessantly talked about, and it's part of his brand, but he talked about winning. And it was in a different tone to me, Salk. Does that just go over your head in terms of, I heard the same talk before from Russell Wilson, or is there something different to it that you feel from him?
No, I would say that a lot of that is the same. I don't know that I hear anything specifically different. There's always been that level of focus. But, you know, if you want to read into it, is he putting more pressure on the organization and saying, look, I'm here to win. I don't care about my stats. I don't care about the numbers, which, by the way, I think is a very fair question to ask of Russell after what we've seen the last, you know, 12-14 months. Does Russell care mostly about winning, or does he care about, you know, being considered an MVP candidate, which is more important to him? Mm-hmm. My personal belief is that Russell Wilson has the best chance of winning in an offense that doesn't necessarily showcase his statistics and make him an MVP candidate. I don't think that's what leads them down the path of winning the most games. So if he's serious about that, hopefully the end of the let Russ cook era is upon us and Russ is ready to just work in the constraints of the offense, or maybe he's just happy with the way the offense looks. But let's go. Quit trying to, you know, show and be an MVP candidate. Just go win football games.
I have a follow-up question about that in just one second, but I had another question I wanted to get off, so I'm going to jump to it first.
Boy, is Jake shaking his head at me right now?
No, I'm shaking my head at you. I'm shaking my head because it's one of those things, like, I don't think that it's not working in the constraints of what Pete Carroll wants to do when you don't have the weapons you used to have. You know what I mean? Like, so Pete Carroll's plan won him a Super Bowl, took him to another, but you don't have Hall of Famers on defense, and I love Chris Carson, but you don't have Marshawn Lynch out there. You don't have, you know, the offensive line you had early in Russell Wilson's career, which was probably his highest rated. I have my own issues with the way Russell Wilson does things sometimes, and a lot of those are unfair because it's like, what does it matter to anyone? But he is not wrong in questioning whether the way that they have been playing offense is the most efficient way to play. That's a very fair thing to bring up.
No, I know. You're right. We got a chance to see what happens when they really let it loose last year. And it worked for a few games. And then we had the Rams game. And then we had the Buffalo game. And Russ threw about 100 picks in 4 weeks. And that was pretty much the end of that.
You're right. That's, you absolutely. No, 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 no.
Them to win.
You absolutely had Russell Wilson. And that's why this was not embraced and why he chose maybe the worst point in his career to come out and criticize anyone, right? Because the narrative at the end of the season was that he had the worst second half of his entire career. But let's not pretend it was like not a multifaceted issue on offense.
Well, I'm sure it was. I look at it and see that a lot of cover two and forcing Russ to be in rhythm over the course of an entire game. I think it was Daniel Jeremiah who was on with us this past week on the Brock and Salk podcast saying, that's not necessarily Russ's strength. He's got a million of them, but sitting back, dinking and dunking and just being in rhythm over the course of a whole game against cover two that doesn't respect a running game, that's not Russell Wilson's strength.
See, I was on board with you, Salk, about letting everything come to him and all that, but this part is the part that I'm going to disagree, because they didn't do that last year. They didn't have any of that in the majority of their offense in the second half of the season. The reason why I think he's so fired up and excited is because of what Shane Waldron brings to the table, because of the offense, because of the ability to get to everything and not have it be a weak spot and get into an offense where you're in Brian Schottenheimer, running an offense that's completely outside of your comfort zone from what you've normally been as an offensive coordinator. Now you've got somebody that actually has been a part of a modernized NFL offense over, you know, the last 5-6 seasons. Now you have something that can really tap into all of it.
That's all fine. Doesn't change the fact that Russell Wilson is a much better quarterback when the other team has to respect the running game. It is, to me, as clean and simple as that. When the other team has to respect their ability to run the ball, Russell Wilson is a more effective quarterback, and he's shown that over the course of his career. I don't think that the way they had things designed, especially at the beginning of last year, teams stopped respecting the run. They sat back there, waited for Russ to bomb the ball. They knew he wasn't gonna beat them in a rhythm passing game over the course of four quarters, and everything just completely fell apart. And oh, by the way, you didn't have an offensive line that could run block or pass block. And the next thing you know, you get yourself into all kinds of problems.
He is Mike Salk, joins us every weekday at 11:30. Mike, we could debate this with you forever, but it's always a good time. You can listen to Mike also on the Brock and Salk podcast. New episode dropped this week. Have a good weekend.
See you guys.
All right, Jerry DePoto talked about the future he sees for the M's in the second half of the season, but one name was curiously absent. We'll talk about that next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Rost.
We are taking you around the diamond thanks to Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. Justin Dunn returns from the IL and will start tonight for the M's in their series opener against Cleveland. First pitch is at 4:10 p.m. Pre-game show starts at 3 p.m. right here on 710 ESPN Seattle. And that's Around the Diamond, brought to you by Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. Jerry DePoto has an M's future in mind. He shared a little bit of it as far as the short-term future. That means the second half of this season. Cut number 17, here's what he had to say in terms of what he hopes to see after the All-Star break.
Our hope is that as we get to the All-Star break, that we see a lineup on the field that is reflective of what we think our future, you know, championship clubs are going to start to look like. And you can fill in the blanks. And that includes guys like Evan White and Kyle Lewis and Jared Kelnick and the young players that you're starting to see already bust through, guys like Jake Fraley and J.P. Crawford and hopefully Dylan Moore is a part of that sooner than later, coming back from his injury. You know, and that could include guys like Cal Raleigh in addition to the players who've already appeared in the big.
Now, part of this cut and part of this interview that he had with Danny and Gallant was to talk about the pieces, the faces that he's excited to see as they move forward. And those are going to be the young guys, some of them still in the Mariners farm system, some of them young, but with the team right now in their rookie or second season. But, Jake, I got to be honest, when we played this cut about 30 minutes ago, we got a few texts from people saying, wait a minute, there's a name or two missing here.
Yeah, Ty France being one of them. Right, he's 26 years old and one of their best hitters, and I didn't hear his name.
I don't actually think he's going anywhere.
No, I don't either. Mitch Haniger, right? I mean,
that's the one that's making people pause.
I think that one definitely stands out, and if you're Mitch, I think you're paying attention to that for sure. But look, this could be as innocent as Jerry DePoto just saying, "Look, we're giving you promise here. Here are our young guys, our young core that's coming up. Mitch Haniger." Isn't a part of the young core. He could be a part of the core down the road if he gets an extension. But, I mean, I think DePoto's making it very obvious as to who he's selling the promise around, who the guys are that they are really hyper-focused on, and that as of right now in wave one and two, because you've already had JP up, you've already had Evan White up, I consider those guys wave one guys, Kyle Lewis. Now you've got wave two coming through. And I think he's really selling that, hey, in the second half of the season, it'll be fun to keep an eye on this young core of guys that we fully anticipate will be around. But I do have to, if you are Mitch Haniger, I do think you're like, that's interesting.
As somebody on this show that has experience in forgetting to mention somebody's name and that person getting mad at them, Mike Davis, running back for the Atlanta Falcons,
That really happened.
Yeah, that actually happened. I think, yeah, I mean, it could have been just a simple slip of the mind there from Jerry DePoto, but that does speak volumes to people who are listening to it.
Now, I got to say that the first time I heard it, you guys, I didn't really think twice until we were all talking about it separately. And Jake, I think you pointed it out, like, Are we reading into it if we wonder that? Or is it a fair question to wonder what happens with Mitch Haniger with this team? Because if this team's timeline for when the rebuild really would result in a team that could contend, if that timeline was with the original date that Jerry DePoto had in mind, I would assume that Mitch Haniger wouldn't go anywhere because he's been so great for them this year, and he's 30, which isn't nearly as young as the rest of their squad, but it's not a guy that you need to start looking at, you know, moving soon because of that. However, if this is a team that, due to a variety of factors, including the pandemic eliminating the minor league season last year, if this is a club that's looking at 2023 to compete, well, suddenly Mitch Haniger's entering his, you know, early 30s, and suddenly you're looking at someone that, like, is he going to be the Mitch we have this season when we're actually trying to make a run at it? So what do you do with him?
Right. It is difficult. And I think with Mitch, the answer to that question is it's going to be up to Mitch. Quite frankly, I mean, the Mariners could try to push and ask for him to sign an extension if they really feel like he can be that one veteran presence that they need on this roster, a proven talent, a high-level talent, and a veteran player that they want. Mitch doesn't have to sign that. He's got one more year left on his deal. They can either trade him or he can let his contract expire and become a free agent after that. So I really think that Mitch Haniger is the one that's in the driver's seat when it comes to his future in terms of solidifying it either here in Seattle or having it be elsewhere. And I wouldn't blame him. At this stage in his career, if he wants to go elsewhere and he feels like he can play for a team that's more of a contender, I think we just all have to wait and see on that. But it just goes to show that in this rebuilding process, in this developmental process for Jerry DePoto and this crew, I think that these young guys obviously are what comes first and foremost to mind, because this is, you have to have a great young core in order to win a title. It's just been proven. You can spend outside, but if you don't have a young core that you can build around, I think it's all for naught.
Well, and that's what I think he was trying to do. Like, there were people texting in earlier, hey, what about Mitch? I think what he was trying to do is say, hey, we've got a lot of young guys, and he has always said this, to be fair, but that what they're watching is the development of these young guys. You're not watching to see if Mitch Haniger develops in the second half of the season, so he's not going to be included there. And same with Ty France. You're not necessarily watching to see if he develops in the second half of the season. Like right now, they are who they are, and they're really good for you. And so he's looking specifically at, like, are we going to see Cal Raleigh? Are we going to see the return of Kyle later? Are we going to see, you know, Moore get back out here? The young guys are who he's looking at with this answer. But I think that the reason people were initially concerned or questioned or asking about it isn't because they think that's what DePoto was necessarily getting to in that answer, but I think because people love Mitch Haniger, and he has impressed and I think surprised, frankly, a lot of fans this year, and has been a highlight of what has been an offense that's been inconsistent and has struggled. And I think that people want him around. Like, there, it's the same reason to different extents that people text in about KJ. Like, if they love someone, they want to know that, you know, hey, sure, is this person going
to
be here?
But to me, the difference is I don't care if anybody has sentimentality towards a certain player. Those days are over and gone for me. Like, as a Seattle fan, we all get very attached to certain players and then attached to players past their prime when they're actually productive. I don't care about that. What I care about, and I understand why people want to keep Mitch around, I'm one of them, is because he's one of the fewest proven commodities that you have. I mean, Curtis, correct me if I'm wrong. How many proven commodities are here on this Mariners roster right now?
Oh, you named him. Mitch Haniger.
Oh, okay.
More than Mitch Haniger.
Okay, who else? You have Kyle Seager, who
Marco Gonzalez.
I don't know if Marco's necessarily proven.
I think Marco is proven. I'm not saying that he would be an ace on every pitching staff. I'm saying he's a proven commodity for you.
Okay, but this year,
he's had a down year.
This year he stumbled.
He has still been a proven commodity for you.
Has been. Is he currently?
That is the question.
Kyle Seager has been.
I'm not saying I'm out on Gonzalez. I'm not saying that. But I'm saying proven commodity, absolutely. And even then with Mitch Haniger, he still has yet to play 162 games. So, like, really the only one is Kyle Seager. Seager's been the one that's been healthy. He's been the one that's been around in that hot corner. And, you know, he might not be the all-star level player that Mitch Haniger can be at his best. But so that's my point. I think Mitch Haniger is one of those guys that, as of right now, with all this young core and the excitement of the future and this, that, and the other – is that not only are you going to have to spend to build around it, but two, you've got somebody that is a proven commodity that can be a high-level caliber player that, you know, another priority should be to try and see if you can keep him around with this organization to bring some stability.
If I'm ending on one final 10-second note, did make me very excited to see Cal Raleigh, though. Kind of reminding fans that they still got some guys coming up here, so... I don't know. You go, DePoto. I didn't mind mentioning.
No, that. I don't mind it. I'm excited about that.
All right.
Absolutely.
Jumping back to the NFL with Michael Bumpus, host of the Seahawks pre- and post-game show. He joins us next on Jake and Stacey.